This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 20th, episode 1239, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being here this morning. Of course, Alice is on with us with the North American Trail Ride Conference, the third Tuesday or Thursday of every month. I don't even know what day of week it is, Alice. So she's on with us the third Thursday of every month and been doing this for a long time. You can go back to horsesinthemorning.com and find all the past episodes where we talk about trail riding and all things competitive trail riding and fun. And, of course, every horseback rider trail rides at some point or another. So
even if it's just a hack.
Yeah, it's all relevant, right?
It's all relevant. That's right.
Yep. I mean, not all of us pack out for a week into the mountains because I don't camp. But, you brave people do.
See, I was thinking about Harry Potter the other day and how in Harry Potter, you know, they camped at the Quidditch Cup.
Yes, yes.
And I was thinking about how that's the kind of camping that you would really get into.
Yes. Yes.
I wish that were possible.
Yes, the very luxurious kind.
Yes.
That'd be the kind I would do. Yes.
But, you know, we did get to meet at a luxurious dinner back in the beginning of August.
Oh, yes, we did. We were up there. I was up there for the podcasting conference in Fort Worth, Texas. And we got together with a few listeners and four of the hosts from the Horse Radio Network. It was the first time I got to meet you in person. We've been doing the show forever.
And you didn't know who I was.
I didn't recognize you. You've lost so much weight. I really didn't recognize you from your pictures. It was congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. That was funny, though. I was like, and who are you? I'm Alice.
As soon as you talked, I knew who you were. But
they were like, oh, Alice. Yeah.
As soon as you said, but I did not recognize you. And I you're going to probably be getting that a lot. You've lost, what, 35, 40 pounds?
35.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. But it was fun. That was a good place to go. And it was great getting to meet all those people and fun to meet the people who own the world's largest ass.
Yes. That's right.
It turns out we have friends in common that aren't horsey friends, but still it was just fun all the way around.
They were there. So, we had a lady there from England who was in visiting her family, just happened to be visiting her family. And she's a big listener of ours from over in England. She has done a couple of live reports from us from England, from big shows over there. And I didn't know who she was when she sat down beside me. And then she said, I did those reports for you. I was like, because I didn't put her being in Texas, you know,
right.
it didn't fit, but she happened to be there with her family. So that was a lot of fun too.
So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Now, I got to ask you, we're doing this in all the shows because we kind of got this question after we did the podcasting conference and I talked about it. The listeners wanted to know the origin stories of how we got the individual shows started. And I was trying, how did you and I meet? We did interviews before, but how did we?
I did an episode of the CHA show with. I'm
with Christy.
Thank you, Christy. Yeah. Like I just all of a sudden couldn't think of her name. With Christy, and we talked a little bit about trail equitation.
Oh, that's right.
And then I got to listen to Stable Scoop, and you and I were emailing about the Nudist Colony episode of Stable Scoop,
which, by the way, is still one of our biggest downloaded episodes ever.
So funny. And then you and I just got to talking back and forth, and NATRC thought it would be a great place to attract some new interest in our sport and into distance riding. So
So when did we start? How long has it been?
I think the first episode was April of 2014.
Wow, it's been a while, huh?
Because it was right around the time that I was going to a competition, and I remember I had to record the episode, and then I left right as soon as we were done to go to West Texas to the competition.
You know,
that's
I've
the only
always,
reason I remember.
I was so glad when you guys came on board, too, because, you know, my wife was a competitive person for so many years, but now just trail rides. And we really wanted to do something about trail riding. Now, you guys do it competitively, but it all relates. You know, it's still out there on the trails.
Well, we have to ride the rest of the time to be able to compete. So,
yeah, I mean, you're riding basically trail riding to get ready to compete. So,
right.
You know, that's all, it's all relative. And I was really glad when you guys came on board because 80% of our listeners are trail riders. They're not competitors. And, you know, I'm a trail driver. So, you know, I just drive for fun and go out with my wife and we go out together. And, you know, so it all comes together. And I'm so glad that you were able to do this more than a year ago now.
Yeah. Well, and I would say as far as being a competitive trail rider, what I like to tell people who are thinking about trying one of these sports is, for myself, I try really hard not to think about the competition at all because I'm not competing against anybody. These people I ride with are my friends and I'm out there to have a good time.
Right.
And sometimes I do really well and sometimes they do really well. You know, sometimes I win, sometimes I don't win, but I try not to worry about whether I'm going to win or lose because then I'm focused on the result and not the process. And I just want to go have fun. And that keeps me chill, and that way I don't get nervous with judges looking at me, and I'm just having fun with my friends with a group of like-minded people.
Very good. Well, I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you.
It was very good to meet you the other night. I'm sorry we didn't get to have a whole lot more time to talk. I was really trying to talk to the listeners a lot, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And Tammy was there, friend who, of course, rode to the horse, and Mary Kitzmiller, who does an episode like you every month. And Mary was telling some very funny stories that had us rolling. So it was fun. I went down to downtown Fort Worth, and I got to experience the interesting downtown, which kind of reminded me of a little Nashville. It kind of had that feeling of a little Nashville with all of the, you know, with all the bars and everything. So that's what I kind of had the feeling of, and all the shops and the tourist stops and all the rodeo and all that. So it kind of reminded me a little bit of that, but it was fun. I had a good time while we were in there. The only horses I saw were the ones driving the Longhorns down down at Main Street in Fort Worth. I went to Texas and I never saw a farm and never saw a horse on a farm.
Yeah.
So, because we were so much into the meeting. So I have to get back to Texas and actually get into the country and not just on your very complicated road system in Dallas.
Yeah. We have to drive a little ways out of Fort Worth to find country these days, unfortunately.
Your roads are the most confusing. The GPS could not tell where I was.
Probably because there's been so much construction. And I know, depends on where you are in the city, but there's been so much construction. I'll be going somewhere and the roads will be different than the GPS thinks. And I'll be like, no, I know how to get there. Don't listen to the GPS because it'll try to take me the wrong direction.
Well, we don't have Jennifer on with us this morning. So you just want to go over what guests we have coming up?
Sure. We have three guests today. Our first guest is Patsy Connor, who is a longtime NATRC competitor and judge, and she's going to talk a little bit about the importance of tack and well-fitting and properly fitted tack. Our second guest is Dave, whose name I can't pronounce properly, so I will let him say it when he comes on, because I'm sure I'll screw it up. And he is going to tell us a little bit about his very special supermodel horse, Scarlet Aphrodite. And our third guest is Lori Nutula from, I think I said her name wrong too, Nutula. There we go. Lori Nutula from Alaska, as a follow-up to her previous interview when she told us a little bit about riding in Alaska. She's going to tell us about her NATRC competition that she recently had. And I understand there were a few small disasters that had to be handled. Disasters always make for good stories. So,
terrific. Well, very good. Well, that's all coming up on today's show. But first, we want to talk about you went to a ride, right?
Yes. I went to a ride in Mora, Missouri, which is about 12 miles south of Sedalia, Missouri. So central Missouri, the weekend of July the 25th. And I took a new rider from Texas with me. Her name is Cricket. And I didn't know Cricket very well. We just decided to go because I met her at a ride and she was friendly and she had time to go. So she went with me and we got there and everyone's like, oh, Missouri, it's going to be so nice out. Not so much. I grew up in Missouri and I hadn't been back in the summer in a while, but you get heat almost as big as Texas. Only it's way more humid. And so it was in the 90, 95 range as far as temperature goes, but it was about 90, 95% humidity. And the first day was okay because we had a nice little rainstorm. And so it was cloudy for after that. So the day was pretty good. But Sunday at 4 a.m. when we got up to feed the horses, it was like a sauna. Cricket went outside the trailer and then she immediately closed the door and said, I'm not going out there. It's disgusting. It's steamy. I think we went to Florida instead
of Missouri. Welcome to Florida.
Yeah. I'm not going out there. But we did.
That's our every day.
Yeah. And we did get out there and we, we rode and it was so hot and it was pretty muddy because they'd been getting quite a bit of rain, but the trails were really well marked. The couple that owns this ranch, it's called Von Holten Ranch in Amora, Missouri, and they are brand new to NATRC. They have put on quite a few ACTHA competitions, and Brandy, who is the owner with her husband of the ranch, is highly competitive in the extreme cowboy races. I think I heard her say that she's made the national extreme cowboy race finals. And they had a huge obstacle course set up just for fun because we don't use the set up obstacles for NATRC. But it was really impressive how well they grasped the sport and how quickly they were able to make adjustments for some of the things that weren't quite right. And like the timing was a little fast for the trail conditions. So they were able to adjust it to slow it down. So nobody was unduly late unless they just weren't keeping up at all, which wasn't a problem. I mean, they took us around a bog that had developed because of the mud, so they rerouted the trails and made sure the distance was the same. I mean, they just did a fantastic job. And I think we started about 27 riders total, and I think 23 finished. There was one unfortunate injury. One of the horses had a pretty bad gash, but she's going to be okay. And then a couple people pulled because they just felt like it was too hot for their horses or, their legs were puffy or whatever. But I was really proud of my horse, Liberty. He really handled the heat well. He only lost a few points on his metabolics. So I guess being in Texas pays off when you go to someplace even hotter. But the funniest thing that happened the whole time wasn't even horse related. Cricket, this lady I traveled with, we don't know each other. We're chatting. And she and I get to chatting about where she's from and what her maiden name was. It turns out she is Maggie's third cousin. My daughter, Maggie, it's her third cousin.
Oh, really?
She's related to Maggie's dad's mother. They were cousins. And she told me her maiden name and I was like, no way. So it's like, here's somebody I met at a ride and she turns out to be family.
It is a small world, the horse world. We say that all the time, but it really is.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just, that was really crazy. So, but right. it was worth it. It was, it was about 10 hours up there and 10 hours back, but we had a great time and the horses had fun. So,
well, speaking of your daughter, we're going to talk about a competition that you actually manage, and that's going to be coming up. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Well, for your product review this week, I know we're going to get your daughter involved, who you're just talking about. Maggie was kind enough to join Reese Koffler Stanfield and I on the Dressage Radio Show and talk a little bit about the Total Saddle Fit Shoulder Relief Girth. And we're going to hear all about that right now. Well, Reese, we've been talking about the shoulder relief girth from Total Saddle Fit for a long time. And it's been you and I doing the talking and Philip and, just all of us, right? And now we had a meetup. I told you about it earlier in the show in Texas with some listeners and some of the hosts from the Horse Radio Network when I was there over the weekend. And I met this young girl who actually uses the girth not for dressage, but for something else. And her name is Maggie. Hi, Maggie.
Hello. I use that girth for trail riding mostly.
But you compete too, right? You compete
I compete. Yeah. trail riding, competitive trail riding mostly is what I do. And so I always had a really hard time keeping my horses from getting girth galls because they're big, big round horses and they just, their girth rub them really bad. And we found this girth and we went ahead and was like, well, let's try it. It doesn't hurt. And I have absolutely loved it for the ride. And it's such a nice girth, you know, nice leather, and it's stood up really nice for the miles that I've done.
And you guys do a lot of miles too.
Yeah, we're doing some fast, hard work too, and it has done wonders for my little Arrow that I've been using. His girth gets up in his elbow really bad, and it has helped him so much.
What kind of saddle do you ride in?
I ride in a Specialized saddle, a little Endurance Specialized saddle. I have a really old one, not one of the new fancy ones. But
sometimes the oldies are better. I'm telling you.
Yes.
The oldies are better. They're broken in.
Yeah, this is a great saddle. It's had, five different owners, and most of them are still doing nature trek today. They're just like, oh, I need a different saddle. And it's like, oh, well, I'll have it. You know, it's just one of those things. It's like the travel, you know, the sisterhood of the traveling pants. Traveling saddle.
I love it. That's so cute. Well, and Maggie, I've also had really good luck with a total saddle fit shoulder relief girth on my mare Jamaica, and we call her Meepy, and she's older and also a little bit on the rotund side. She was retired, and yes. I put her back to work this summer, and I asked Justin, I said, how will the girth work on kind of a plumper individual? And we were having also the same issue with girth galls, and it's been fantastic. She has not gotten a girth gall or anything. So I have also had great luck with a little more rotund in the belly region.
Yeah, I also use it on my other little mare who is definitely very rotund, and she's a lot of excess skin in her elbow, so it just kind of gets caught up in there, and it has been great on her too. You know, once again, rotund. And so, yeah, it's been a lifesaver because that's one of the things that I've always had problems with my mare and this new gelding. I've always had trouble with girth galls because they get up too far in their elbows or they just rub wrong. And I've always had problems with that. And that's a bunch of points that I get taken off. And when I found this girth, I have, you know, it minimized it, if not completely gone on my girth galls.
You know what I've determined? Your horses all need a diet. That's what I've determined.
Oh, you'd be nice. You'd be nice to those
kind.
Hey, I got a pony that's so fat, too. And you know what? We have the same problem with our saddles for the harness, for the driving. He gets the rub marks just like you guys are getting. And unfortunately, Total Saddle Fit doesn't do a girth yet for driving. Maybe someday.
I think he's been asked to do it.
Yes,
I know.
He has been asked before to do it. But thank you so much, Maggie, for letting
Thanks,
us know.
Maggie.
Absolutely, yeah.
We
I'm glad
it.
That, you know, share, because like I said, it's changed my feeding.
Our first guest today is Patsy Connor. She is an NATRC judge who became a judge in the early 1980s under the tutelage of Bev Tibbetts, and she became a rider in 1972. Patsy Connor is our first guest. She is an NATRC judge who's been judging since the early 1980s. She began riding in NATRC in 1972 and was fortunate enough to learn how to be a horsemanship judge under the tutelage of Bev Tibbetts. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate you inviting me.
So we're going to talk a little bit about something that we frequently do at an NATRC ride, which is called the tack check. And you are kind of famous for the early morning tack check, as is now Sarah Rennie of Region 6 in Nebraska. And I'm curious how this got started and wanted you to tell me a little bit about the benefits of why we do a tack check.
Well, I think it got started with Bev Tibbetts. It's like, we don't want people to go out on the trail with anything that could be unsafe and or what would be causing some harm to the horse. I think back on it, we started doing this the first thing on Saturday morning. I want to see you tacked up in the morning just as if you're ready to to time out. And when you do that, I can see how your tack is fitted, how safe it is, if it's in good condition, all of those kind of things before you ever get out on the trail and get in trouble. I think it's important mainly because during the week when you're just riding every day, it's important to check your tack, but it's never under the stress that you'd get when you're riding 4 to 6 hours a day, sometimes even longer, and overextended mileage and different terrain than you do in your own training situation. So that's why I want to do it on Saturday morning. It comes from the way I was trained, and I just feel it's really important.
So what are you looking for specifically? Like, what pieces of equipment do you tend to look at the most?
Okay. The method in my madness is that I start at the front of the horse, and I do a quick look at the bridle. I'm looking for the bridle adjustment, what kind of bit you have, if the bit is properly adjusted. Some of the things that I see once in a while is that you're using a leverage bit, or what we sometimes call a curb bit, and there's no curb strap on it. Now, when I do this, I ask the rider, is there a reason you don't have a curb strap or curb chain? Many times, and I was just reading an article kind of getting ready for this, it's like, do they really know the difference? Do they know that they should, because it's a curb bit, you should have a curb strap? And in many cases, they don't even know that they should. So I tell them very briefly that this is something that you're not using the bit as it's designed. So that is something that you ought to check into. I also tell the people that whatever I say to them, I don't want them to change it if that's the way they've been conditioning their horse. But I want them to be aware that it could cause a problem. And I don't take points off at the beginning of the ride. I just judge the results. So at the end of the day, if the curb chain is adjusted too tight, I will mention it to them. And then when they check in at night, that late afternoon, if there's rubs in the curb strap area or in the mouth, then I will take points off at that point and talk to the rider about a better adjustment for it. So I go from the bridle, depending on what kind of bridle it is. If it doesn't have either a split ear, a brow band, or a throat latch, I might talk about that because it could easily slip over the horse's ears. And it is not being used as it was designed. I go to the breast collar and I look for adjustment there. And are there possibilities that it could cause a rub, or if it's not even going to function, if it's too loose or too tight? I look, I am very famous for running my hand underneath the pad and seeing if the pad is up in the gullet of the saddle. I go on around and look for, well, I also check making sure if there's a pommel bag that it is properly adjusted and not loose and bouncing and rubbing on the horse's withers. I look at what is on the back of the saddle, if there's anything. Sometimes that's where the raincoat is put, and if it's left flopping, I will suggest that they secure it. If there are saddlebags, I will point out that saddlebags come down on the horse's sides, on their flanks, and it keeps the heat in, especially in these hot weather rides. And also they bounce on the horse's side, and over 20, 30 miles, that can cause a problem with these things flopping on the horse's side. I look for the candle bag, and is it secured? If it's a different kind of, other than the saddle bag. And then I go on around and I check both sides to make sure that everything is secure. I look at both the cinch rings. If there's a tongue in the cinch ring, on the cinch ring, and it is not secured, I will ask them to fix that, mainly because it is a safety issue. If that tongue is sticking out, it can puncture, hurt. It's just there as a problem, a potential problem. The other thing that I absolutely am a stickler for is if you're riding a Western saddle and you feel like you must have a back cinch, there must be a keeper between the back cinch and the front cinch. this too is a safety issue. It can get caught on brush and be pulled up into the horse's flanks, and you got a bucking strap there. So those are the beginning kind of things that I look for. It's good to see that they have some kind of a scoop that they can scoop up water, or a sponge that they can get water out of the creek to sponge their horses. Alice, can you think of anything else that I've checked over the years?
No, that sounds like the gullet's the one that I used to get the most trouble for, because I would just forget after I cinched my horse down, and you've cured me of that, I think. Well, after all these years, it's like you hate to get a point off for something you know better to do.
Yeah. Well, if I don't see any problem around the withers area, I don't take off points. But I make you aware that over time, that can cause a problem.
Right.
So that's the thing. And then the other thing is some people ride a treeless saddle, and that's an impossibility. I mean, those treeless saddles are not designed to keep the air flowing along the horse's spine as the saddles were originally designed. So I don't take off points unless I see a problem at the end of the ride, or at the end of Saturday, or at the end on Sunday. I guess I didn't mention martingales. I think one of the things that really worries me is that I do see people sometimes riding with a standing martingale. That's what Western riders call a tie down. These are strictly a training device, and they really are not recommended for trail riding, as it severely limits the horse's ability to use his head. It puts pressure on the nose when the head is too high. That's what the riders are after, but really that's a training issue and should be handled at home. If you use a standing martingale on the trail, if they get into a water situation, horses have been known to drown if they have a standing martingale because they can't use their head. Also, if your horse starts to stumble or lose its footing out on the trail, they can't use their head adequately to be able to maintain their balance. The running martingale is probably the better choice, but you must always have those keepers on the end so that the ring on the running martingale doesn't get up and get hooked on the bit somehow. So those are two things that I forgot to mention. I think we mentioned the breast collar. A crupper is always good if you're riding in steep mountainous territory. I made the mistake a couple of years ago riding in Colorado, and my horse just did not want to go down a steep incline into a little creek. And the more he refused to go down, and I'm urging him, the more my saddle slipped forward. But a crupper is probably a good idea, but you should try it before you ride out on the trail and make sure that once that crupper hits his tail, he doesn't object too much.
Do you have any good tips for how people can train their horse to accept a crupper?
Well, I start my horse by putting it on and adjusting it properly and doing a lot of lunging with them.
Okay.
In the ring or... I guess when I lived in Wyoming, we used to pony our horses a lot. The kids would get on the school bus in the morning and I would saddle one horse and pony the other. But that was another way that we would start our horses with anything new, is by ponying them. And that way, if they began to object, I had control and I wasn't on their back trying to just stay on.
Well, that makes sense. So you see a lot of just casual trail riders, you know, like sometimes we have these rides at places where other people are riding. Do you ever have the urge to go over to other trail riders and give them a tack check, or do you see that do people who just trail ride for fun? I mean, do they tend to have some of these same problems?
Well, wait a minute. I want to clone her and put her at the head of every trailhead in America. She should be there to check every trail rider that goes out, because how many times have we been out and seen all of these things?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I do. A number of years ago, now this doesn't have to do with tack, but a number of years ago, I went fly fishing with my sister in the Du Bois, in the Fitzgerald Wilderness above Dubois, Wyoming. And we camped out, I think, for 4 or 5 days. It was really cool. But anyhow, we had Wranglers. It was just so, I was so uncomfortable. I'd get off the horse and I'd start to, you know, take off the bridle and put the halter on, and a Wrangler would come running over. But at any rate, when we're riding in the steep mountains, my sister would turn to me and she'd say, "Patsy, say something to that rider. He's sitting way back on the cattle. It's hard for the, you know." But yeah, I see people with, you know, all kinds of adjustments that need to be done or improper use of bits. You mentioned Sarah Rennie, and one of her apprentice things, she was with me, obviously, so I said, "I think you could do the tack check." And she went out, and it's important for open riders too. Every once in a while they do kind of mess up because they get pretty confident and then they don't check. But she found one open rider, very experienced open rider, with the bit on upside down. But she did ask them to change that.
That happens even in like event and dressage shows. That's not just trail riders.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. But I mean, in a way, it might be a positive thing because it says that you at least are cleaning your tack. And that's another thing I forgot to mention is that I really do. I comment on whether the bit is rusty or whether the curb chain or strap is so encrusted with gunk and junk and rust. I do comment on that, and I will take off points sometimes for having your equipment not clean. Your cinch needs to be clean too and well adjusted. But that is so true. I mean, it's just, I put it back together in a hurry, and I didn't double check.
I might have been guilty of that with my driving bit once or twice that my wife caught. So I might have been guilty.
Yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing that can happen easily, and that's why you want to do that second check, or, you know, just before you get on your horse. Is everything right?
It's kind of like that when you're getting your CDL and you have to go through and do the whole pre-engine check.
Okay,
I had a wheelchair bus CDL when I lived in Iowa, and I had to go around and, like, for the test, explain all the different parts of the engine and what I was looking for. That reminds me of that. I passed that with flying colors.
Yeah, that's another thing that's kind of important too. Is that sometimes I'll ask, "Why are you? You know, what kind of bit are you using?" And they don't know. And then I'll say, "Well, you know, why did you choose this bit for your horse?" "Oh, well, it came with the horse. It's always I just used the one that the other owner had." So that's another important thing. I think you should be aware of what kind of bit you're using, what are the effects of the bit, and, you know, why are you using it on this horse?
I'll tell you what, Patsy, could you come back? Could I have you back on another time? And maybe we could do a segment about bits and bidding.
Oh, sure. Okay. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. So, because I think that's a whole subject we could probably really dig into I think that'd probably be a really good segment to do.
We could do a whole show on that every week. I mean,
well, that's probably true too. But thank you so much for help.
I do. Can I make just one more thing? If anybody is interested in reading more about these kind of things and reading a little deeper, our Hoofprint magazine is available at the natrc.org site. And if you go to documents and go to archives, some of the things that I quoted today are specifically in the winter of 2013 Hoofprint, and it's an article by Priscilla Lindsay and Jamie Dietrich on tips on tack adjustment. It also has excellent pictures. One of the biggest things that we see is the adjustment on the halters are not correct, and especially how you tie a rope halter. So those tips are there, and also another good resource is the Certified Horsemanship Association Composite Manual. I mean, it is full of all kinds of good things. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate all your sage advice.
Thanks.
Well, it was fun hearing her. And, you know, we were talking before before we did the interview with her off air about the fact that the 70-year-olds are representing right now in the distance riding world, aren't they? Between Potato at 73 winning his third Tevis, and then look at Patsy out there still doing her thing and making sure everybody's safe. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, it's really amazing. We have another rider in our region. His name is Larry Gould, and he's, I lose track, I think 75 or 76, and he's still riding the open division, so he does 60 miles every other weekend, and he's still hanging in there.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break for a song today, and then we're going to come back with more guests for you. We have a couple more lined up today, and we're also going to be talking a little bit about snakes. Yep, that's right. Going to talk a little bit about snakes because it's something we all deal with on the trail at one point or another.
I've always been the shy and quiet type, biding my time until the time was right. Driving through life with one foot on the brake, missed every chance that I did not take. Now I'm gonna do whatever I please. No, nothing's gonna have a hold on me. Maybe some crazy thing, not gonna be afraid. I'll stand up straight and tall, made up my mind, I'm gonna do it all. I'm gonna do whatever I please. Yeah, no, nothing's gonna have a hold on.
Well, now, Alice, I know that you have a ride that you manage every year, and it's usually at the end of summer, right?
Well, it was supposed to have been in May, but we had all of that rain this year, and so it got postponed until Labor Day.
Okay.
So we're going to be at Trace Trails in Athens, Texas, the weekend of Labor Day, and we have both a one-day competition on either Saturday or Sunday, and we have two-day competition, which is our normal ride. The way that most of the more experienced riders tend to compete is on a two-day ride. And so if somebody were to want to enter, if they see what they call an A ride, that's the 2-day ride, and the B ride, that's a 1-day ride. In case, you know, that somebody wants to go to the website and check it out. But it will be, hopefully the weather will be nice. It's, the camping is primitive. So, you know, no Harry Potter Hilton for you, Glenn. Sorry.
Me out.
Yeah. I know you're really sad.
I am.
Really excited about coming.
I'm very
excited. All the way from Florida. So, but it'll be a lot of fun. One of the features of this particular ride is that we are down the street from Terra Winery. And so anybody that has some free time and wants some air conditioning or some wine and some air conditioning can meander on up to the winery. I mean, it's close enough you could ride your horse, but most people just drive. And they can do a wine tasting and buy wine from the Terra Winery. So,
well, that sounds more interesting already.
Yeah.
That might make the camping all worthwhile.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a hotel really close by, too, so you could always just go stay there.
Well, you know, I figure with enough wine, you won't know how uncomfortable you are.
That's probably true, too, yeah. For me, it's usually tequila, but, you know, wine works, too.
Yeah, tequila brings it to a whole new level.
You know, so if anybody is interested in checking out a competition for the first time or the second time, they can contact me at my email at ayovich@gmail.com. Or if they'd like to come volunteer and just see what the sport is all about, you can contact me there as well. And we always need volunteers.
Very good. Sounds terrific. And we are going to be heading off to our next guest. Looks like he is ready. Why don't you introduce him?
Our next guest is Dave. I'm going to try his last name. Wisniewski. I'm going to have him say it because I'm not sure I got it right. He is a production assistant who has a beautiful horse named Scarlet Aphrodite, and they do a little endurance, but mostly they do photography and modeling. Our next guest is Dave, and you know, I don't know how to say your last name, so I'll let you say it.
I say it Wisniewski.
Ah, Wisniewski. I like that. Wisniewski.
I'm mispronouncing it though.
Oh,
but
you are.
Close enough.
Anyway, Dave is an endurance rider who is widely known on Facebook for his beautiful pictures with his horse, Scarlet Aphrodite. And since I know absolutely nothing about Dave other than what I see on Facebook, I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm owned by Scarlet Aphrodite.
And every horse endurance person out there understands that. So I love that name, by the way. Where'd that name come from?
She actually came with the name. I didn't think it was the most manly name. I was going to get, you know, name my horse something more manly, like Buck. But I figured I could just call her Scar. It doesn't get any more manly than that. But I've never called her Scar. She's always been Scarlet.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, she's too pretty to be Scar, because then you're just one step away from Scarface or something.
Yeah.
So, so you told me a little bit about yourself, actually, that you started riding when your daughter got interested in horses.
Yeah, so, I was working a lot of overtime, and she wanted to do horse lessons on the weekend, and I thought that would keep her busy while I was working. And then it turned into she wanted a horse, so it turned into I had to work to pay for her horse. And she did a lot of horse shows, and after that, I wanted my own baby horse. So I found Scarlet when she was 3 months old and brought her home when she was weaned at 7 months old and just sort of walked her around like a puppy for the first part of her life. She doesn't have any training other than what I taught her, and I don't have any real training other than what I picked up from watching my daughter's lessons. I did a couple lessons.
Well, you guys are, how old is she now?
My daughter's 18. She stopped riding when she was 14, and we sold her horse because it was too much for me to take care of two horses.
Well, I actually, how old is Scarlet?
Scarlet?
Yeah.
Scarlet's eight.
Scarlet's eight.
Oh,
okay.
She's a youngster yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, she is, for an Arabian.
And so how many miles have you all accumulated in AERC?
Oh, gosh. I really don't keep track of how many miles. I'd say it's under 1,000, that's for sure.
So you just sort of take it as it comes and ride for fun and...
Exactly. It's all about the horse. It's all about Scarlet.
I got to tell you, though, your horse does not look like a endurance horse. She more looks like a supermodel. She has that supermodel look.
Right. She's not built for endurance. Right around 40 miles, she's tired.
Yeah. Well, there's she looks like she'd rather be on the runway, you know, modeling clothing. That's what she looks like. She's so petite. I mean, she's just so pretty.
So how did, is it because of her great beauty that you started taking all the photos of her? Is that how that started? Because she was so photogenic?
I used to paint portraits, and it would take me a couple months to paint the picture, and then somebody would take the picture and hang it on their wall. They'd buy it for me and hang it on their wall, and nobody would ever see it. And I've been into photography for a while, and I got on Facebook, and I started putting pictures on there, and people liked them. And I figured it's a better thing, you know, a better way to share my artwork.
Well, let me tell you, I've done Photoshop for years, and you're really, really good at it. So,
gosh, thanks.
You're really good at it.
The one that cracked me up the most was the one that you had holding Scarlett, holding the baby with Scarlett's head as the baby. It was a little creepy, but it was really funny.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. It worked out perfect. I had the idea that I was going to put a baby picture. So what I do is I search Google Images and I find a picture, and I found that one, and it fit just perfect. And I laughed pretty hard at that when I do it. I usually laugh harder at my stuff than most people do.
Well, I don't know. We laughed pretty hard.
Now, Dave, do you have a day job?
I do. I'm a production supervisor. It's sort of a high stress job.
A good
way to unwind is to, I sort of doodle on the computer to unwind after work. I don't watch much TV.
Okay. Very cool. What about the police uniform? What's up with that? There's lots of pictures of a police uniform.
Yeah, we just did the police ride. We do these costume rides. I met a group of friends a few years back that did a couple costume rides, and I fit in really well with them since I take the pictures and do the videos. And we just did a police ride weekend before last. I'm working on the video right now. But that was a lot of fun. Some people actually thought we were police officers.
You look the part. You look the part of a cop. You really do.
The last mile, we were running up the road, and the cars were getting close to us. So I got up in front, and I was waving traffic off. People were actually slowing down and moving over if they thought I was a real cop.
No. Couldn't you get in trouble for that, like especially in California? They just seem like they might want to crack down on that stuff.
We didn't get in trouble for that.
No, but I mean, your cop outfit kind of looks more like the stripper version. So I don't think anybody's going to really think, you know, if they look close.
What are you in for? Well, I'm in for impersonating a police officer.
In a stripper outfit.
Stripper.
Did it have Velcro on the legs?
It did not.
Oh, okay, just checking.
Oh, well.
That's funny. Well, you do a great job with these. They are terrific pictures. We're going to put, if you don't mind, I'll take one of them and put them in our show notes for today's show.
And maybe send over a link whenever you finish with your police video, because I love it when you post those on the NATRC group. In fact, that's what gave me the idea to talk to you about the photos and stuff, because somebody said, what's the deal with all his videos? I'm like, I don't know. Let's find out.
It's really just for fun. Before I was into painting the portrait side, I was a free fall videographer, and I did free fall videos with a big heavy camera.
Like jumping out of a plane?
A big heavy hammer up on my head. The cameras used to be a lot heavier than they are now.
Yeah, you didn't have GoPros back then.
No, I didn't have GoPros. It was like putting a brick on your helmet.
And that's like skydiving and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got out of skydiving when my daughter was 2. And didn't do any videos from then until I started hanging out with the endurance crowd.
Well, thank you. I was just curious how you got into the pictures. Do you have any future plans for places that Scarlett will visit? I know she's been to Egypt, and she visited the Tevis without you, just, you know, as a model, of course. And
yes, I don't have future plans. If they pop into my mind, I make them. I try and keep track of current events, like when she broke the internet, like the Kardashians.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then she had her sex change operation and changed her name to Steve.
Oh, I think I missed that photo. You may have to pull some of these back
now,
up.
Now, is there a website or Facebook page? Where can people see them?
I usually just put them up under my name. And sometimes I share them on the AERC, the American Endurance Ride Conference website.
Yep. Well, thanks, Dave. We appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thanks for calling.
All right. Take care. Well, that was fun. Dave's a great guy. And, you know, everything he was saying about being a horse dad, we've heard that story so many times from women, from moms and dads, who the kid gets into horses and then she gets out of it 2 years later, but the parents are still into it for the rest of their lives. So that happens more often than you think.
I'll bet it does. I know I've been fortunate that my daughter still likes to ride, but I've heard of several people whose kids started riding and then quit, and mom and dad kept the bug into retirement.
Right. Well, you got to get in it somehow. So you might as well have your kids dragging you into it.
That's right. We'll take them however they come.
That's right. And that is one of the largest growing populations in the horse world is, you know, it's 40 to 60-year-old women and men. Those are getting into it for the first time. That's one of the biggest growing populations. Unfortunately, it's not teenagers like it used to be.
Well, I think teenagers seem like they're concerned about working more and getting jobs, and they're also
More concerned about sitting on the couch playing video games.
Well, that was going there next. Yeah, yes, yeah, that was my next. Or
that's their biggest concern.
Chatting with their friends on Facebook.
Well, it looks like Jennifer's having a tough time getting Lori, so I don't know if something came up. You know, it's one of the – we knew when we started a live show – we talked about this actually before we started the live show 5 years ago – that, you know, we deal with horse people, and they have emergencies because, you know, crap happens all the time to horse people. So we knew that sometimes it would be hard to get guests on that have an emergency come up, and I hope that's not the case today.
But, yeah, I hope not too. Hopefully we'll have her come on next month, and we can talk to her about her Alaska ride that took place.
You know, normally when we have guest issues, no matter what show we're doing, it's that we've got the time change wrong, especially European guests, because there's so many time zones that it's tough to get it exactly right a lot of times. So hopefully that's all it is, and we'll get her back on next month. But let's talk about snakes, and it's so appropriate that you mentioned this article, because Jennifer stepped out the door yesterday, our back door, which has a wooden deck. And she stepped out the back door. I heard a scream and I heard the door slam. And of course, I knew exactly what that was. She had opened the door, and on our back deck, looking at her from outside the back door, was a black racer snake, which are harmless. Nonetheless, that's usually the reaction I have when I see a snake looking at me when I open the door is you scream and shut the door. So it took off. Black racers are very, very fast, and we have a lot of those here. But it took off and was gone. So, you know, but it's funny that you mentioned snakes because we just had she had her scare yesterday.
We know. I've ridden on trails for a long time, and that's been primarily where I spent most of my time riding. And I've been lucky enough to only actually encounter a snake up close once.
Really?
And that was, yeah, I've been really lucky. I mean, I've seen them, they've been far away, but they haven't been close enough to be in my zone. But at Pole Canyon Ranch, like in 2014, we were trotting along the trail and a snake rattled at me. And I didn't see it, but I heard it. And I was just like, oh, crap, we need to move now. And my friends were all wanting to gather around to look at the snake. And I'm like, leave the snake, leave the snake. Let's just go. And they were like, oh, darn, he left. I'm like, good. That's good.
You know, we do have a problem here in Florida with snakes of all kinds. But we have a lot of the good ones. We have a lot of big black snakes and things like that. But we also have in my neighborhood here, which is an equestrian neighborhood, we have a lot of rattlesnakes. So we have had to, you know, we do kill the rattlesnakes when we get a chance because we have so many small animals and large horses here. So, you know, that's something that we do. But the rest of the snakes, they're harmless, you know, usually. But you're going to talk about snakes, so let's talk about the five steps that you saw on EquiSearch, the five steps to snake bite safety for you and your horse.
All right. First of all, it's important to be aware of where you're riding. If it's in an area that is going to have a snake, you know, are going to be snakes. So you just start out with being aware. But the first thing that happens if you have a snake bite is to not panic. Now, you know, we're always talking about not panicking, and it's all well and good to say don't panic until it's time to panic.
Until you get by a snake.
Right, exactly. But if you panic and, you know, and your horse panics, his heart's going to pump faster, or your heart's going to pump faster, which is going to make the venom go through their system faster.
Right.
And so that's bad. You don't want to panic. So the first thing you should do if your horse is bitten by a snake is to slowly back the horse away to a safe distance. And don't get off the horse till you're sure you're safe from the snake, because there's no reason for the two of you to get bitten by the snake. And then, you know, you want to, if it has a leg bite, you know, if it's too far before a treatment is available, you know, some of the articles I read, I found said you could apply a tourniquet, but others said not to apply a tourniquet. So that was, you know, there were conflicting details on this. This particular article says you can apply a tourniquet, but you should monitor your horse for secondary problems as you go. And you should also check to make sure the horse is still breathing. If the horse got bitten on the face, it's a good idea to have a short length of hose that you can put into the horse's nostril. Now, I don't know about you, Glenn, but I don't carry that with me on the trail.
No, I don't usually carry that either.
And so, like, some of the things I found that should go in your snake bite kit was potential for a tourniquet, a short length of hose so you can keep an airway open. There's something about little suction cups, because suction cups can help draw the venom back out of the wound.
Yeah, they say the whole sucking on it thing is not good anymore. That was apparently...
Right, but this, well, they didn't tell you to suck on the wound, but they said, like, to get a suction cup. And I wondered if that would be like, you know, like when babies have those little things, those little bulb things that come home from the hospital.
Yeah.
Like for, and I wondered if that would help to suck venom out of the wound.
I don't know.
I wasn't sure what they meant by a suction cup. But, you know, it's a bit, the very, you know, very least, if, you know, if you have very far to go, to walk slowly toward the barn, but keep the horse's head up to keep the toxin from spreading. And if the barn is, or the trailer is far away, call someone to bring a trailer to you, you know, to the closest point you can get on the road. You know, don't move the horse any further than you have to. So that was one of the number one tips. The second one is to be sure and name the snake. Like, if you heard the rattle, then you know it's a rattlesnake. But if you can figure out what snake it is, that's going to help with getting the horse the correct treatment.
That's a huge help, actually. But, you know, how many of us know what every snake looks like? But at least if you see the coloration or the pattern, that'll help them identify
right.
it. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, honestly, I haven't been around enough snakes, thank goodness, to really know all my different snakes. I know if I get bit by a snake in the water, it's probably a water moccasin. If I get bit by a snake that rattled, it's probably a rattlesnake. But I've been really happy to not be bitten by, you know,
anyway.
Be too many snakes. So, and I know that like the coral snakes and the rat snakes look a lot alike, but
yes.
It has to do with the colors.
They do, actually.
They're like something about yellow. I can't remember. It's like, but it has to do with whether the yellow or the red touches the black, tells you if it's a dangerous snake or if it's a harmless snake. Because rat snakes, you want to be around because they kill mice and rats.
I went outside with the dog one day, and we had a rat snake that was much the color of a coral snake. It was about 7 feet long, and they're very skinny, though. They're not fat. And he was just laying there sunning himself in the yard right where I normally walk the dog. And, you know, I saw it. Fortunately, I was actually looking down and saw it. So we avoided it. But it just lay there. It never moved. It just stayed there for the dog till we came back in the house. And he had little bumps in his belly. So I assume he'd just eaten something.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, we come across them here in Florida all the time. Especially the black racer snakes. And, boy, they say they move about 40 miles an hour. And they do. When they take off, it's they're gone.
They're gone.
Yeah.
That's good. That's how I want my snakes. I want them gone.
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 So you call your veterinarian.
You call your veterinarian. And something else that I read in my research about snakes was that they are making a rattlesnake venom vaccine that horses and dogs can be given.
Oh, really?
But because I've heard people talk about that they got their horses rattlesnake shot. But my vet isn't doing it. It's, I think it must be, they said that the efficacy hasn't been proven in horses yet. So it may be better for dogs than for horses. I don't know if it's the same vaccine. That's something I didn't get to finish researching that to be sure. So, and it said, you know, if you get bitten, you know, because you could get bitten, like, you know, we've gotten off to take a pit stop or just take a break. It said, wash the bite with soap and water if you have time, you know, to get medical attention as soon as possible. You know, like hopefully you're somewhere where you have cell phone service. So you can call to get help. And it said, you know, apply a tourniquet only if you can't get medical attention right away. It says, don't cut open the bite wound or suck the poison out. And it said that be aware that people who spend a lot of time around horses may be particularly sensitive to anti-venom made from horse serum. So I don't know if that means you might have an allergic reaction to the anti-venom because they make anti-venom from the, I don't really know what that meant exactly. If it meant that
you're probably never going to know that until you get this shot. Right.
And then, you know, I said, again, we talked about the length of tubing. It says, make sure your horse can breathe. That's the number one thing to look out for. Because if your horse can't breathe, you know, if the swelling, you know, affects its face, that's bad. So, and then call your veterinarian. That's, you know, can't drill that in enough. And when you go back out on the trail, just be really careful. I know snake bites can sometimes take 6 months or a year to completely heal. One of my fellow trail riding friends, her horse was bitten by a snake and he didn't get particularly sick. I mean, they got him to the vet, but all of the skin sloughed off from the area and he needed lots of antibiotics. And I mean, he was off, you know, kind of, you know, off for a while. And I think a really common place they get bitten is in the back of the leg. Like if they step on something, it gets them in the back of the leg so their tendon can get infected or it can puncture the tendon sheath. And so you have secondary problems that, you know, related to the snake bite.
And I love in this article that they list here's all the different snakes that are poisonous. It makes you not even want to go outside the door. Eastern diamondback rattlesnake, western diamondback rattlesnake, prairie rattlesnake, timber rattlesnake, Mojave rattlesnake, a sidewinder, a masugula? I don't know how to say it. A black-tailed rattlesnake, a dusky pygmy rattlesnake, a cottonmouth water moccasin, a copperhead, a western coral snake, an eastern coral snake, and a Texas coral snake. Now, if all of that doesn't make you want to stay indoors, I don't know what will.
I forgot we had the Texas coral snakes. That's something that we see a lot in North Texas. But I am going to southern Arkansas this weekend, so they have them there.
You don't want to ride in Florida is anywhere near the Everglades, where, of course,
alligators.
Pythons.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
And alligators.
Yeah, pythons, which were brought here by people and let loose. They're not native to the Everglades, but they do very well there. And they just last week killed a 19-foot python that weighed almost 500 pounds.
No way.
Imagine that showing up at your doorstep.
Well, that one, you don't have to worry about them biting you. You just have to worry about being squeezed to death.
And them just, you know, swallowing you whole.
Right. Yes.
You're not going to have time for anti-venom. Oh, my God. Yeah. They have a python hunt every year here in the Everglades where they give rewards. Like, I think it's, what is it, $1,000 or $10,000 for every one you bring in? But they give you also, you have to be certified, you have to take less, you have to do classes, because they had so many yahoos going out there, and these things are really, really dangerous and huge. So they had to give classes and get you, you have to have a license to hunt them. You have to know what you're doing.
So. Well, speaking of having needing licenses for things.
Yes.
Something I learned about in Missouri, this is not about snakes, but you have to have a license to remove silt from the creeks that feed into the Missouri River.
What would you remove it for?
Well, because all the rain they had washed a lot of silt into their creeks.
Oh, so people were wanting it back?
Well, no, they wanted it out of the creek because it was making bogs on the trail. Because the silt had washed over. But they said you have to have an excavating license.
And I'm sure that cost $120.
It was a $15,000 fine if you don't have an excavating license.
Whoa! So pay the $120, huh?
I just thought of all the things to have a license for. It just made me think of that.
Well, we'll post a link to this article. It was on EquiSearch. It was very well done, and we'll post a link to that in our show notes as well.
All right.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate you being here. Of course, Alice is here with us the third Thursday of every month. You can find all the past episodes at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And the best way to listen to our recorded shows is in our app, iPhone or Android. Just search for Horse Radio Network. Horses in the Morning is one of 8 shows there. It's free, it's easy to use, and it's the way tens of thousands of people now are listening to the show. And of course, you can find the NATRC at
NATRC.org.
NATRC.org. That's all for today, Alice. We'll talk to you again. Happy trails.
Happy trails.